Welcome to the Forum on 90.5 WCBE, bringing you the conversation shaping Columbus, straight from the not-for-profit Columbus Metropolitan Club. Every week, community leaders and local voices like yours come together for lunch to unpack the issues that matter most to Central Ohio. Want to join us in person? Tickets and details about upcoming forums are available at columbusmetroclub.org. This week, nonprofits help communities function, respond to crises, and deliver services people depend on every day. But as demand grows and funding models struggle to keep pace, how can we ensure these critical organizations have the resources they need to support some of Central Ohio's most vulnerable populations? Joining us this week, Lindsay Baker, Vice President and Director of Philanthropy and Engagement with the Huntington National Bank, Emmeline Jerome, CEO of Lower Lights Ministries, Hannah Jones, Deputy Director of the Department of Development with the City of Columbus, and Phil Washburn, President and CEO of the Furniture Bank of Central Ohio. Your host is Sheldon K. Johnson, Executive Director of Partners Achieving Community Transformation. Let's dive into this week's Columbus Metro Club Forum, our annual State of Nonprofits.
Thank you, everyone, for being here. We've got a great panel here. It's something I'm really excited about talking about. So let's just go ahead and dive in. Phil, could you define some terms for us? We're here to talk about the state of nonprofits. What is a nonprofit organization, and how does it differ from other organizations in the community?
Thank you for that, Sheldon. So nonprofit organizations are businesses that are filling a need in our community. We're just not doing it to drive profit. We're doing it for the impact that it has in the community. We're filling that gap, that need that exists, and we step in, provide those services, those goods to help move our community forward. And I think the difference is that we're not driven by profit. But I think the distinction that's oftentimes missed is that money isn't important. You know, nonprofits, we definitely need money to do our work, just like any business. We're just not driven to the point of profitability. We're driven to make sure that we can meet the need for the families that we're serving.
That's great. Thank you. Emmeline, could you share a little bit about how are nonprofits funded? How is your nonprofit funded?
Yeah, nonprofits are funded in a variety of ways. For us, we are dependent on grants. So we try to diversify our funding. So about 45% of our funding comes from grants and foundations. 45% of our funding comes from individuals, those $15 a month checks type of individuals to larger gifts. And then 10% of our funding comes from are generated from what we do. So we do a variety of things and offer services, and so that generates about 10%. But diversifying our funding streams is something that has really proven to keep us sustainable over the last 35 years.
Great. So this is for all of you, right? We got two nonprofit leaders, a public sector employee, private sector. Why are nonprofits important in Central Ohio?
I think for us, they often are our front door. They're also our problem solvers. So at the city, and especially for the Department of Development, as we work on implementing the mayor's housing strategy, which really focuses on stability, stability requires a lot of the partners that are sitting here with us to be creative and to be creative with our neighbors to figure out what they need and how they need it in order to continue to be successful. So for us, we try and drive operational support through our Elevate grant, which is a 3-year operational support grant to our partners. So we may not be able to fund a whole program, but how do we provide flexible dollars that allow them to meet the mission, which allows us to do what we need for our neighbors?
That's great.
And I can build off of that. So from a private sector perspective, these nonprofits are providing critical services that are positively impacting our community and leading to a strong community, which is really important to the work that we're doing every day from a business perspective. So a thriving community results in thriving businesses.
So Sophia talks about how we're going to be looking forward. But to do that, we've really got to understand where we are, right? So what is the current state of nonprofits? Are nonprofits financially healthy right now? Where there's a certain environment, right, where there's increasing costs. How does that impact the work that you do as nonprofit leaders and as partners who partner with nonprofits?
Well, I think, when you look at the nonprofit sector, you're going to get a pretty broad spectrum. There's probably some that are doing quite well in this environment, but I think on the whole, you're seeing more and more nonprofits experiencing the same challenges that the folks that we're serving experience: increased costs, inflation, tariffs, making the work that we do that much more difficult. There's a lot of changes at the regulatory level that we're now having to address. And so I think when you look at it, it's going to be a very diverse spectrum. But on the whole, what we're seeing right now is a sector that is having to adapt and come up with new approaches, new solutions, because the ways that things have happened really for many years are kind of fundamentally changing under our feet. And when you have to go through those seasons of rapid change, you know, it can be incredibly stressful. And so then you run into situations where staffing are getting burned out, which creates turnover, which is a loss of, you know, of knowledge and experience. And so there's a kind of a series of cascading or domino effect kind of situations that I think are taking many nonprofits to a point of being stretched kind of in a way we haven't really ever, or at least in a number of years.
Yeah, I would agree with that. It is, it's a challenging environment that we're living in, not just from a nonprofit perspective, but like Phil mentioned, personal lives and the trickle-down effect. So from a funding perspective, it has been challenging. Grants that have been surefire in the past are suddenly either being diminished or cut, or just non-existent. And so it's been challenging, but I think one of the good things, hopeful things, it has really, like you have to buckle down with your own personal finances and evaluate and see what structures are in place, what's working, what's not working. And when things are smooth sailing, it can be you don't think about it, but when you're pressed and there's challenges, it forces you to look at your processes and make sure that, hey, what's working well and what do we need to fix and what do we not need anymore? And so from a hopeful perspective, it's been good. And it's forced us to look at our processes and make sure things are running efficiently. And it's also provided courageous leadership. I have had more conversations with people who have just risen to the occasion. And so there's a hopefulness amidst the challenging times as well.
Yeah, and I agree with the optimism, because if anything, I'm seeing a lot of collaboration that's coming out of some challenging times that, to your point, everybody's experiencing. So, you know, from a corporate perspective, we're leaning in and trying to understand how we can support ways outside of just traditional funding, but is there leadership opportunities or expertise that we can help provide to help the community as a whole navigate these challenging times?
Anna, you talked a little bit about the Elevate grant opportunity. Can you say a little bit more about how the Department of Development is innovating and partnering with nonprofits differently?
Sure. I think Elevate has allowed us an opportunity to engage and get regular feedback from our grantees, which is really what works and what doesn't. I think one of the things that came out of COVID was before we were doing a lot of the straight programmatic funding, and that was unsustainable for a lot of organizations, because if they lost our funding, then the program could no longer continue. And that leaves a lot of uncertainty in our community. So we started to move towards much more capacity building operational grants, which is that the flexible dollars, which used to be a scary space for government, quite frankly, became harder and harder to find in the civic framework. So we said, how can we step into that? We may not be able to give you as much, but maybe we're the money that you don't have to ask as many, we don't need as many questions answered around. To give that flexibility. The other is that we heard quite often that a single year funding was very difficult for sustainability planning. So our goal, assuming that the budget allows and City Council approves, is always to do 3-year grant cycles so that we can allow sustainability planning for our partners. And then the last is, we are very much a reimbursement environment, and we know for some of our smaller nonprofits that can be a real challenge. So we try to do a set schedule of advance payments that allows for, once again, a little bit more creativity. We're still government, so the guardrails are big, but you know, we try and make them a little softer to allow us to be more responsive to the partners.
That's great.
We've been a recipient of the Elevate One grant and then most recently the Elevate All grant. And I can tell you what she said is so important is that it's the freedom and flexibility. It allowed us to, at a time the first grant was, you know, employee retention was a real challenge, right? And so being able to, you know, take those dollars and reallocate them to make sure that we were able to bring some folks up to a wage that was allowing us to hold on to that talent was really impactful for that season. Obviously, now we're in a different boat, and so we're using those dollars differently. But all of it is in order to help us really accomplish the mission. And I think the piece about really just trusting us to know what is best within the guidelines that they set forward is really freeing. There's times as fundraisers and as nonprofit leaders where we actually have to do the calculus in our head, is this grant worth it? Which is, I hate to say that because, you know, when you're looking for every dollar, you want every dollar. But sometimes the requests that are asked of us, we kind of wonder, is it really worth, are we even going to get enough to cover our costs, let alone to advance our mission? And so programs like this really do allow us to be able to say, yeah, we know we're investing some time in this, but we're going to get a great return on that allows us to move the mission forward.
Great, thank you. So again, this is a diverse panel. You're coming from different sectors and different perspectives, but I'd really love to, if you could reflect a bit on where are there opportunities for innovation? You know, maybe in, you know, as a nonprofit leader, where can you innovate to partner with funders better? You know, how would you like to see some innovation from funders and vice versa? I'd love the you all reflect on that.
I can start some conversations that we've had at Huntington. And, you know, AI is such a hot topic right now. And when you talk about building capacity and operating more efficiently, you really can't talk about that without leveraging AI. So we've had conversations around how can we provide opportunities for the nonprofits to leverage trainings or resources or experts in the space specifically designed to help nonprofits and exploring what that might look like. So I think that there's some great opportunity to help the nonprofits work smarter and not harder, understanding that they really are trying to do so much and meet this growing need in the community.
I would say, you know, there's two things. I think the first is just that collaboration. I've seen more and more of my colleagues having really direct conversations with other nonprofits and really asking what are the overlaps? Where do we align? What are ways in which we might be able to co-locate, you know, share resources, do things collaboratively better than we can do it on our own. And those conversations are super important, but they take time. They take a lot of effort and energy to build trust, to get boards to kind of come on board and understand the risks that we may be taking to be a part of this collaboration are worth the benefits on the back end. So I think I'm seeing some of that, and I think it's really important for nonprofits to continue to have those conversations. I think it's the second thing that we're trying to do at the Furniture Bank is really asking the question is, how do we need to do things differently to accommodate the world as it's changing? And so one of the things that we recognize is we always need more furniture, especially dressers, to meet the need for our families. And yet it can be really challenging for us to get enough of those donated. So we, you know, 10 years ago, 12 years ago, we started a wood shop. So we build dressers from scratch in our own manufacturing facility, but that's still not enough to meet the demand. And so our team, you know, got together and we came up with this idea called a pop-up wood shop, where we now take flat pack dressers to corporate partners, community partners, civic partners, and they build them on site, gives them an opportunity to do some team building and community impact in their own location. And then we're bringing it back to the Furniture Bank to serve our families. So it was meeting our need, but also listening to our corporate partners who are always looking for ways to engage their team members, their associates in a really unique and fun environment, and oftentimes on their own site. And so accommodating that become a real win-win. And so I think it's looking at what are the opportunities, what are the problems, and then as we come up with the solutions together, it moves the needle forward.
In terms of innovation or innovative partnerships, I'm thinking 2 years ago, we had our greatest expansion in the history of our organization when we started the concept of an early learning center in Central Hilltop and right on Sullivan Avenue. And one of our longtime volunteers in our tutoring and mentoring program with our youth happened to work for a construction company, a design-build construction company. And when we shared with him the vision of an early learning center, a place where you would want to send your children to be able to provide affordable, accessible childcare, and not just childcare, but early learning as well in Central Hilltop area, he was on board. In fact, he has a son who was attending an early learning center in Powell. And he said, it's not fair for my son to be able to have a nice place to go. The kids in Central Hilltop need that as well. And so he rallied his subcontracting community in the construction world. And as a result, over $500,000 in subcontracting in-kind donations and labor on the weekends helped to renovate our $2.2 million building. And so all it took was just a conversation with a mentor who loves kids and has a kid similar to the age of the kids that we are trying to serve. And he did the work. We shared the vision and he took it from there. And so that's just a beautiful example of, it's not that hard. Just share the vision, tell the stories, and invite people to come and see. Who would have thought that the subcontracting construction community would have been so on board? But that was just a beautiful example of collaboration in a very innovative way. And it just started by sharing the vision.
And I think it's so important that you share the vision, because oftentimes we don't know what nonprofits need. You know, we think we do, but I think being forthcoming and transparent and what you need and how we can help and just sparking that conversation, because again, when we, you know, discuss it together, a lot of times organically just solutions come about, or we find ways, you know, creative ways to provide support that, you know, you might not even be thinking of, or we weren't thinking of, but sharing examples like that are just a great way that corporations can show up in ways that you might not have even been expecting.
Lindsay, I love what you said about the vulnerability and openness, and I love the optimism. I feel like this has been a very optimistic panel, but I do want to set up, you know, for us to talk a little bit about those needs and opportunities. You know, I talked to Hannah and Department of Development enough to know that this work is hard. Right? You know, we talk amongst ourselves as nonprofit leaders. It's stressful. It can be overwhelming. It's hard. So when you think about the work of partnering with nonprofits as nonprofit leaders, private, public sector, what do you see as some of the most urgent needs right now for you and your seat and more broadly?
I think one of the most urgent needs is just an overwhelming amount of crisis management that our neighbors have to do every day. And that makes it really hard to get ahead. You know, especially in the housing space, the setbacks and barriers and the day-to-day work that has to be done just to navigate how to fill out paperwork to access the amount of resources that already aren't available is exhausting. And it's exhausting on our neighbors and it's exhausting on our partners. So I think what we always are trying to do is be cognizant of the number of hard conversations that have to be had. Collaboration and innovation are really important, but quite frankly, the federal environment is in such a state that a municipality cannot fix it. And you know, the problems are national problems. And so we are trying to figure out every day what's the best space for us to be in. And it really is, what is that tipping point for our neighbors? Where can we help not have to go into a shelter system that is already overwhelmed? How do we get ahead of the crisis? We have so many partners who are managing already below that threshold. How can we use policy and limited funding to get above that threshold? So for us, that's our biggest, is maybe not the most obviously vulnerable, but those folks who might get missed. And but for our ability to provide rental assistance, to do direct cash assistance, how do we then preserve the resources that all of our nonprofit partners have to those who are already in the most need?
You know, I think a couple things come to mind is, you know, as I talk with so many of my colleagues, and it's, I was not a CEO during COVID, but many of my colleagues are taking this period as very similar to what they experienced during COVID, the amount of seismic shift in responsibilities and the changes of the environment. And so it's a very similar environment. I can say that, you know, that's been true for us. And one of the real challenges is that as nonprofits continue to get stretched thinner and thinner, is that there's little margin left when, you know, when somebody needs to take a vacation day or have a sick day, when, a new emergency arises, everybody's already kind of at, you know, working at 100%. And so that's the challenge is how do you continue to, you know, make sure, because at the end of the day, when that client needs something, we're going to try to do everything we can to make it happen. But it has a wear and tear on the staff and those frontline workers and everybody having to kind of hold as many strings as possible together. And so I think when we recognize the impact that the nonprofit sector is having on the community, and yet so many folks are literally just working on that thread's edge of just being able to say, I just can't do it anymore. What would be that impact on our community if our sector just, you know, collapsed as a result of just working at this pace for too long? I think that's one of those things as together we have to continually be asking the question, how do we do a better job? How do we make sure we're holding on and caring for each other through this season? Because we know it's going to be a season and we'll come out the other side. But how do we make sure we're caring for each other through that process?
Yeah, from a needs perspective, externally, so outside of our organization, we do housing as well, supportive housing for folks reentering society from incarceration, drug recovery, and family stabilization. And we do our best at being able to provide wraparound services for our folks in terms of housing, getting them stably housed for anywhere from 6 months up to 3 to 5 years. But then when they're ready to move on to that next step and being able, we've done what we can do and partnered with really good organizations in financial empowerment, workforce development, mental health. But then that next step of affordable housing is so challenging, especially for folks reentering society from incarceration and having criminal backgrounds, finding landlords that are willing to give somebody an opportunity in housing, even though they've been with us and have been doing well and getting all of the training and education. So affordable housing, and then also finding out, I've talked to several of our ladies who graduated from our Rancher Housing Program a couple weeks ago, and they shared about getting jobs, and they're excited, but they're right on that edge of the benefits cliff. So finding one lady just had surgery and was telling me about her $7,000 medical bill, and she's on the Affordable Care Act. And so she's like, what do we do with the $7,000? I'm like, well, you negotiate with the billing, the hospital. So those types of things. There's many nonprofits that do really good work, but we need a community to come alongside. Okay, so with the next step. So when our program graduates are graduated and going into the community and trying to find housing, how to navigate healthcare, affordable healthcare, how to find doctors and mental health folks once they've been, when their Medicaid has subsided and now they have jobs, how do I find good mental health counselors? So those types of things, that's where it really takes a community of people to come alongside the nonprofit community to be able to help folks take that next step. And the good part is, the folks realize that they're not alone in the world. And that's what we tell the ladies in the prison every week. You're not alone in the world. There are more people that are for you than against you. And I'm excited to go tomorrow morning to Ohio Reformatory for Women and share about you all and say, hey, there was a sold out crowd of people, nonprofit leaders and business leaders who really care and just need to know about you and the challenges that you face so that we can come along together and come up with innovative solutions.
This one's for Hannah and Lindsay. When you think about the partnership that you do with nonprofits, what's something that you wish that your nonprofit partners understood in order to be the best partners for you and your sector?
Yeah, so I can start. So I touched on this a little bit, but just being transparent and what you're experiencing and what your organization is experiencing and how we can help. And I would encourage nonprofits to, again, look at the partnership holistically. So of course, funding is critical, but what are those other ways that we can show up and support outside of that? And that's, like I said, leadership, that's strategic advisory, that's just all, you know, anything that you could possibly think of where we have a plethora of employees that are excited to get engaged. We have a leadership team that encourages our participation in the community. So, but don't assume that we know what you need or what you're experiencing. So, make sure that you're transparent and then let us know how we can help.
I think building on the transparency is, you don't have to do everything. I just need you to do one thing well. Mm-hmm. So I think, I mean, everybody in this room fights the battle of like, do you chase the grant? And you end up adding a new program because that's what the grant will get you. And maybe you can use a portion of it for something else. I don't need somebody to build a grocery store, just can tomatoes really well and then sell those tomatoes, right? So for me, it is always like, you don't have to serve 500 people, just serve 10 people all the way from beginning to stability and be okay with that. It's, you know, I think sometimes we get caught up and the outcomes have to be big, that we need a big number. And I think the more that we have to tackle as a city, very real world, big city problems, it takes longer to get a single human to that place. And that is more valuable to us than necessarily I gave 600 people a job training versus I got one person to a job.
Back off of that, and be realistic with, you know, the goals that you're setting and what you're committing to, because oftentimes what we're seeing is you're setting unrealistic expectations and you're putting that on yourself, and it's not necessary, right? Just be realistic and set attainable goals. That way we can come alongside you with that.
So Phil, Emmeline, same question, right? What do you feel like, what would you like funders to better understand, partners to better understand about the work that you do on the day-to-day basis?
Yeah, that's a good question. I know we have a number of private foundations that have supported us over the years, and it is such a joy when family foundations will actually come and visit. So we have one out of Cleveland who's come down multiple times, and just spending 2 hours, I don't like to sit at a desk all day. I love to walk and talk. So to take some of our family foundation trustees on a walking, talking tour of our three locations and show them, this is our early learning center, this is our family stabilization townhouse unit. And then be able to share with them the statistics, but also the stories, and then have opportunities for them to talk to some of our housing participants so you can see where where their investment is going. And I would say having folks actually come and see the work that they're investing in is crucial. One of the things with grants is that just honesty. I know there have been times where we've reached out to a funder and to just say, hey, we're struggling on this goal. And so being able to have the freedom to do that, which is kind of like with trust-based philanthropy, where you can have that relationship of mutuality. Hey, we're struggling in this area. Our infrastructure and IT isn't that great. Can you help us? Versus we have it all together. We don't want you thinking that we don't, so that you will stop or continue funding us. But just having that mutuality of, hey, here's a problem that we have run into. Can you help us? And then having honesty of if we're bumping up against a goal that we're struggling with, and being honest about that. We've had, never have we had a funder say, and it's not very often that we have that happen, but never have we had anybody say, oh, that's terrible. It's more of like, what can we do to help you, type of a thing. So being honest and transparent goes a long way. And they're just reciprocity and mutuality. And then having folks actually come and see that the work that they're investing in is very helpful. And it brings us joy to be able to showcase the work that we're doing with our funders.
You're listening to the Columbus Metropolitan Club's Weekly Lunch Forum on 90.5 WCBE. This week, nonprofits help communities function, respond to crises, and deliver services people depend on every day. But as demand grows and funding models struggle to keep pace, can we ensure these critical organizations have the resources they need to support some of Central Ohio's most vulnerable populations? This week, we're hearing from Lindsay Baker with the Huntington National Bank, Emmalyn Jerome with Lower Lights Ministries, Hannah Jones with the City of Columbus, and Phil Washburn with the Furniture Bank of Central Ohio. Your host is Sheldon K. Johnson with Partners Achieving Community Transformation. We'll get back to this week's Columbus Metro Club Forum, our annual State of Nonprofits, after a short break.
What makes a great leader? That's the question we explore in Innovating Leadership, Co-Creating Our Future. Hi, I'm Maureen Metcalf. Each week, we dive deep into the systems, mindsets, and traits of great leadership by interviewing the world's best leaders, from business founders to prime ministers. Their insights and practical experience provide a guide to help you become your leadership best. Take the lead and listen now on the WCBE podcast experience at WCBE.org, on the WCBE app, and on NPR One.
Do you love amazing stories? I know I do. I'm Michael Kent, and every week on my show, we examine something from history that's so unbelievable it sounds made up, but is 100% verifiably true. It's a podcast called The Internet Says It's True, and there are hundreds of episodes to choose from. For example, did you know the story of how Leonard Nimoy came up with Live Long and Prosper for Star Trek? Or how Colombia is dealing with a hippo problem that goes back directly to Pablo Escobar? Or one of my favorite stories, a man figured out that a nondescript Winnebago being auctioned online was actually an important part of space exploration history. These are all stories from The Internet Says It's True. Listening to a podcast has never been easier. You can listen through any popular podcast app, through the NPR app, or download the fantastic new WCBE app, click the Podcasts tab, and look for The Internet Says It's True with Michael Kent. You'll have so many stories up your sleeve, you'll feel like the smartest person in the room, especially if you're home alone.
Hi there, this is Morgan James. Every album represents a step in an artist's journey. Hello, music lovers. I'm inviting you to listen to Music Journeys with Mike Foley. Mike mixes music and conversation with artists to share what informed and inspired their latest project, how the love of music began, what music means to them, and so much more. We've chatted about three of my projects, the most recent being Soul Remains the Same, a soul album of songs you would never expect. You can always expect the perfect combination of music and stories on Music Journeys. The show airs Saturday afternoons at 3:30 on WCBE. Recent episodes are available on the major podcast platforms and the WCBE app. To meet and hear more from all the musicians featured since its start in 2018, including me, to be the first to be featured three times on the show, look for Music Journeys on WCBE's podcast experience at WCBE.org.
Welcome back to the Columbus Metropolitan Club's weekly lunch forum on 90.5 WCBE. Nonprofits help communities function, respond to crises, and deliver services people depend on every day. But as demand grows and funding models struggle to keep pace, can we ensure these critical organizations have the resources they need to support some of Central Ohio's most vulnerable populations? Helping us explore this week's forum topic are Lindsay Baker, Vice President and Director of Philanthropy and Engagement with the Huntington National Bank, Emmalyn Jerome, CEO of Lower Lights Ministries, Hannah Jones, Deputy Director of the City of Columbus's Department of Development, and Phil Washburn, President and CEO of the Furniture Bank of Central Ohio. Our host is Sheldon K. Johnson, Executive Director of Partners Achieving Community Transformation. Let's get back to this week's Columbus Metro Club Forum, our annual State of Nonprofits.
So many of our partners are they're fabulous to work with, but I think the one thing that we see sometimes is that maybe they don't recognize just how busy we can actually be. And so there's times where partners are they're working in a fast-paced environment, and so they're wanting things turned around relatively quickly, and it can be really challenging for us to have to kind of stop everything that we had planned that day and turn something around, because we know how important it is to partner with those folks, and so we want to honor that. but it can create kind of a number of kind of downstream effects on us, as we had a full day already planned and now we have to kind of pivot and respond. So I think it's just recognizing that the more time that you can give us, you know, more lead time to turn things around, to respond, the easier it is for us to make sure that we're partnering well and giving you the best product.
That's great. Thank you, Wolf. Well, for our viewers at home and everyone in the room, it's the longstanding tradition of the CMC to take questions from the audience. So if you have a question, you can go to the microphone where Doug's waving right now. I'm going to ask one final question of the panel, and then we're going to pass it over to Doug for panelist question, for audience questions. So the final question I'd ask all of you, we've talked about what nonprofits need, what nonprofits wish funders need, and vice versa, but what's the takeaway that you would like our diverse set of audience members and viewers to take away? What's the one thing that you want them to take away from this conversation? Let's start with Lindsay and just come this way.
Sure, yeah. We are not going to be able to meet the growing needs in this community alone. It's going to take collective impact and collaboration. So I know I've talked about that a lot today, but partnerships, collaborations, creating advocates, and just being open to maybe doing things a little bit differently than how we've done it in the past.
Yeah, I would agree with that. Collaboration and getting out into the community and actually going and visiting the places that, if you are a corporate funder, go and visit a passion. Find what your passion is if you don't know, or maybe you do, and go and find organizations that are doing that and visit people. Like Doug said, yeah, it gets busy, but we'll always stop, especially when there's somebody who's actually curious and wants to come and see. Please do that. So curiosity goes a long way. Getting out into the community, a lot of times people will say, I've never been on Sullivan Avenue. I've read about it, I've seen about it on the internet, but I've never really come to visit. So get out of your zip code or your bubble and come and see the good work that's going on in the community, because there's a lot of good work going on. But also support us. So we definitely, funding is important, but also your partnerships and manpower and just your interest goes a long way as well.
I think it's appreciation. We really appreciate the work that everybody in this room does. I joke, if I'm calling you, it's because something's not going well. So I am super appreciative of every single phone call and every single time that people raise their hands and don't say no, or that they are out of capacity. When we had Sawyer Towers, the furniture bank like literally ran out of furniture. So they were building dressers for us. So I think it's just an overwhelming amount of appreciation for everybody and their staff.
You know, I think it's, you know, not to have that kind of toxic positivity, but I think it's that we have to recognize that we can do this. We can continue to work together. We can continue to have the conversations that we need to have to innovate, to come up with a solution. We can't control all of the things that's creating the environment, but we can control what we do together, which kind of, I think, echoes what's already been said. But there's just, I think, a sense that if we don't do it, who is going to do it? So we can do it. Let's you know, lock hands. Let's continue to move forward. Let's continue to find ways to get it done.
That's great. Thank you so much, everyone. We're going to pass it over to Doug to get questions from our audience. Doug, what's our first question?
Sheldon, thank you very much. Thank you so much to today's panelists. We had a really enjoyable pre-forum call also with these fine folks. Thank you all. Great questions at CMC always have two things in common. They can be asked in just a few sentences or seconds. And what punctuation mark does a question always end with? Or what does a question end with? I gave away my own answer. They end with a question mark. Thank you to our regulars. Yes. If you have a question for today's panelists, please do join us here at the microphone. If you're watching online on YouTube, type your question in the chat. We'll try to get to as many of those as possible. I'm going to launch us off with this one from Laura Fay. How can nonprofits connect with willing corporate employees who might be interested in either volunteering or serving as a board member?
So most corporations have a community page that will give you a contact information for individuals who can help you get connected. I would encourage you to do your research and make sure that the funding priorities for the corporation align with the work that you're doing. That's a great start. Not to say that that's always specifically how we show up within those pillars. We do step outside of that oftentimes, but that's a great segue into a partnership is through employee engagement, whether it be through volunteering or board engagement.
And I would just say practically, if you can create a very tangible opportunity that connects those folks to your mission, you will have people lining up. Everybody is looking for ways to connect with the missions. And so if you as a nonprofit can create a really tangible opportunity, a really, ready-made that folks can experience the mission, can come away feeling like they've contributed, you'll be able to really grow that over time.
Use your board members that you currently have, like use your network to help facilitate those connections.
My name is Brian Urbanski. I'm the executive director of the Aubrey Affordable Housing Foundation, and we provide fully furnished housing to some of the most challenged members of and vulnerable populations in our society. Columbus voters recently approved a bond package, and there's $500 million that has been earmarked to that. And Hannah, I was wondering if you could talk about opportunities that may and resources that may be available for housing providers to expand our particularly affordable housing properties and to grow and to be able to serve more people.
Sure, always a pleasure to see you, Brian. So I believe, and I was just out of town, so I'm gonna preface it with that, but I believe that there was just an announcement about the NOFA that is out and live on the City of Columbus's webpage that is specifically looking at non-traditional housing options. Again, I will couch it in the fact that is gonna be construction-related costs, not operational support for your organization. And we can follow up separately. I don't wanna take up all the time on the nonprofits talking about, although affordable housing is a component. About the $500 million, but it is live on the city's webpage, and that would be the starting place for you, Brian.
Thank you. Melanie Hill asks, what are ways to help corporate funders appreciate the time it takes to achieve lasting impact? Solutions to problems addressed by nonprofits are complex and time-consuming versus the pace of problem-solving in business.
Yeah, so that kind of goes back to what I was talking about with setting realistic expectations for outcomes. And I think, again, just being transparent and making sure that what you're building out from an expectation standpoint is attainable and realistic. Because ultimately, what we want is impact, right? But we do understand, while a lot of times we want instant gratification, we want to see that happen really quickly, that doesn't always mean that it's done intentionally or sustainably. So I think it's just partnering with your corporate funders and partners to understand what that project timeline looks like and setting attainable goals and measuring those outcomes.
Thank you. Tasha Booker, CEO for Action for Children and Human Services Chamber, board member. So I want to thank the panel for really painting a picture of an ideal state for most of us to work towards. I think you did a really good job. I want to introduce another perspective because we know that 5 nonprofits have closed since January. They are over 1,000 layoffs since January of 2025. Collaborations and mergers can only get us so far. We know that the FRAC made a recommendation for $220 million investment into our community. We need dollars and actions. So how do we ensure community needs are met while available resources retreat amidst the rising costs?
Well, that is a big question, Tasha. I think that funding, of course, is going to be critical, and we're going to have to work together to explore different funding streams and funding resources. And I think that that's going to be a much bigger conversation. It's going to take all of us coming together and prioritizing these needs. So I think it's a big lift. It is. And I don't want to discount that.
I think part of it too, though, is that just like the previous question about the time for nonprofits to be able to have the space to innovate and collaborate, it's going to take time to figure out the FRAC recommendations. It is county, it is city, it is city council. But also, I go back to this is a national conversation and these are national problems. And so I do think that it also behooves us to be honest that there probably isn't an answer for all of it. And that, you know, one of our struggles as a community is to collectively identify the priorities and the vulnerabilities and then the resources that match with them. But I don't know that there is a scenario where we're able to sustain an entire sector and all the need at a local level.
Thank you. Just to make sure we bring our general audience along on the conversation, can you define FRAC briefly, that term?
Man, Doug. Dang it. Do it, Phil.
Advisory Council, I think.
Yes. Yeah. Sorry, guys. I was out of town yesterday. I apologize. So the Funding Review Advisory Commission was a commission of philanthropic partners, civic leaders, the county, the city council, to really review tax revenue options, as well as, honestly, process improvements, procedural improvements, and other ways for us to look at the needs in our community. I think it's important to highlight it was not confined to just nonprofit partners. There is also the arts community, the tourism community, and other stakeholders who also access various tax revenue sources. So the goal of the report was to come out with a number of recommendations. Part of them are to generate more revenue, and then the other part of them are a call to all of us to look at efficiencies in order to allow for sustainability across all of those sectors, not just the human services. Thank you to you guys for coming to the rescue on that. I appreciate it.
Thank you. Hannah did not mean to put you on the spot. I think we have time for two more questions. Here's the first of the last two. Central Ohio is growing. How can we encourage more corporate newcomers to engage and support nonprofits?
Well, I'll say, you know, I think it takes our corporate community, you know, continuing to set the example. I think one of the things that's true about Columbus is we have a very generous corporate community that are engaged, and they've set a standard for how corporate partners can engage with the nonprofit sector. So I think as they begin to meet with, you know, the individuals in these newer companies, that they can do a great job of saying, this is the way we do things here in Columbus. And as you become a member of this community, this is the expectation that we have for you, is that you're going to be engaged at this level. I think as nonprofits, you know, we're constantly meeting with these new companies, and many of them, they don't even have an infrastructure built out much, you know, the great corporate, you know, partnership, you know, offices that many of the companies have, they don't have anything like that. So we're actually stepping in to help them kind of figure things out along the way. And so I think it's, as nonprofits, part of that engagement on our part, the way that we can contribute back is helping them to build out their infrastructure, helping them to build out their philosophy for how to engage with the community along the way. And I think it's a way that we can give back to them.
One of the things too about corporate sponsors, especially larger corporations, have different pillars and the types of organizations that they serve. So just speaking on behalf of the small and mid-sized nonprofit organizations, it is challenging because a lot of the larger nonprofits get all the love because of the number of people and the volume of people that they serve. And so being mindful also, one of the things that is a smaller or mid-sized nonprofit, we tend to focus more on churches, places of worship, civic organizations, and where people are. So people that are part of the corporations go to churches, civic organizations, are involved in civic organizations. And so meeting people individually, the employees, versus the corporate foundations and that type of a thing. So just speaking on behalf of the small and mid-sized nonprofit organizations, those that don't have national names and chapters all over the United States, but are just Central Ohio located, I would encourage, especially if you are part of a church community, I know we have many church partnerships where the members of the church are part of the business community and they've gotten involved that way. So for the smaller nonprofits in the room or mid-size, and you haven't been able to get seats at the corporate tables, don't despair, but just reach out to the individuals that are part of those bigger companies.
Thank you, Jennifer Walton, community member. You know, we all know the stresses and how hard this environment is. The funding is shrinking, the needs are growing, and the disparities are widening. You all have mentioned innovation quite a bit. And so, Phil, I loved your example. So what is the appetite then for nonprofits who have to move more like businesses to drive top line growth? And it's not just cutting expenses. And they are doing innovative things like what we've seen with CMHA, the example that you just gave, which you could have sold furniture for market rate or luxury to offset what you don't get in funding. So if that could be the future, what are you all's thoughts of nonprofits taking that type of approach to drive revenue when we have to operate outside of a federal funding environment or even local funding? Thank you.
Well, I'll just say, I think, yeah, that's the future of healthy nonprofits is going to be, as I think Emily said it earlier, it's you have to be diversified. You can't just depend on one or two funding sources because those sources we've learned now can go away very, very quickly. And so I think, you know, having those conversations and being realistic with all of our funding partners to say, you know, we may have to scale back a little bit in this particular area, but that's so we can have long-term sustainability because we need to invest in some of those innovative ideas that are going to allow us to have that top line growth that we need. And so I think it's really that, you know, that mix of saying what revenue can we generate, what can we do that we already do well that we can leverage to help us grow, even if it might mean a pullback for a season, just so we can be healthy to move forward.
And from a corporate perspective, we want all nonprofits to be sustainable and financially healthy. So I would say that we're definitely more flexible than maybe we've been in the past on how we can come alongside you to help support sustainable efforts. So again, going back to maybe just because we've done something historically this way, it doesn't mean that the future can't look different.
Diversity of funding is key. We have a 40% rule where we will not allow one grant to cover more than 40% of a program, which is crucial because we've watched, unfortunately, a lot of our friends have had to close the doors or cut programs because they were 100% dependent on one grant for a particular program. We have 9 programs, and so that 40% rule has been a foundational principle for us since day one. And so just diversifying your funding is crucial.
Thank you, everyone. This was a great conversation. I wish we had more time, but Doug's telling me we gotta wrap up. We have Ralph Smithers from Encova Insurance here, so I'm gonna pass it over to Ralph. Thank you.
You've been listening to the Columbus Metropolitan Club's weekly lunch forum on 90.5 WCBE. This week, nonprofits help communities function, respond to crises, and deliver services people depend on every day. This week, we came together to explore how to make sure these critical organizations have the resources they need to support some of Central Ohio's most vulnerable populations. This week, we heard from Lindsay Baker with the Huntington National Bank, Emmeline Jerome with Lower Lights Ministries, Hannah Jones with the City of Columbus, and Phil Washburn with the Furniture Bank of Central Ohio. Your host was Sheldon K. Johnson with Partners Achieving Community Transformation. The presenting sponsors of this week's forum were the Columbus Foundation, Huntington National Bank, and Nationwide. This forum was also sponsored by Bath & Body Works, Benefactor Group, Columbia Gas of Ohio, Kramer & Associates, Encova Insurance, Installed Building Products, and Millard Consulting. The presenting sponsor of our live stream was the Center for Human Kindness at the Columbus Foundation, with the Columbus Dispatch as our live stream partner. Additional support was provided by Downtown Columbus Incorporated and the National Veterans Memorial and Museum. If you'd like to keep exploring this week's forum topic, our fantastic partners at the Columbus Metropolitan Library recommend reading Reimagining Nonprofits and Philanthropy by Vu Lee. Join us next week as the not-for-profit Columbus Metropolitan Club once again connects people and ideas through community conversations. I'm Doug Buchanan. Thanks for listening.